My name is San Mahat. I'm one of the principal engineers at VA Linux Systems. With me is Zach Sprackett, also of VA. We're going to talk to you today about some new interesting technology in terms of doing hardware management using Linux. First, we're going to go through, and this new hardware innovation that's kind of, it's actually been around for the last 2 years, but it's something that's actually been really catching on now in the commercial arena. Is a protocol and interface called IPMI. IPMI stands for the Intelligent Platform Management Interface, and we're going to go through IPMI, why it's a cool thing, who should care, and we're going to talk about a suite that we've been working on for the last year called Vacuum, which originally was designed to do cluster management, although in the last 6 months it's been moving quite a bit into the ISP and ISV arena in terms of usability for anyone who's doing co-locating or just trying to monitor and manage a large-scale install base of servers. We're going to touch on where we came from, where we are, and where we're going. This talk is called Managing Remote Servers with Linux. Or for those of you who were at the keynote, our mission statement. Low sleep, whatever. So IPMI was created by four main companies, actually. We're missing one here. HP, Intel, IBM, Dell. Oh, yes, and the 1976 Philadelphia Flyers. We're currently up to 1.0 specification, although most hardware at this point is still 0.9. And to give you an idea on how fast this thing is moving is that everyone's really jumping on it, and spring 2001 is when we're expecting to have the 1.5 final draft. And it's important to mention these other companies simply because this is not strictly an Intel-driven thing, right? Although the first hardware implementation of this stuff, it has historically come out of Intel, this thing is being driven by a large number of individuals, being governed by committee, so very much like the DIG stuff, the DIG 64 and the UDIG stuff and, all the other stuff that's going on. So there's definitely been a lot of kind of just global input into this thing. So one of the components, we're going to touch now on the components of IPMI or a typical IPMI implementation. The first is this thing called the BMC, the Baseboard Management Controller. Basically, it's just a microcontroller with a couple of chips around it. The BMC is normally placed on a motherboard, although you can put it onto a PCI card or whatnot. The trick is that you have to be able to get standby power to it. So the BMC microcontroller is always running. It's running whether the system's off, whether it's on. As long as the system's plugged into a wall, it's going to be running. Okay. Historically, we had to do... people had to use their own micros and write their own firmware. Although to date, actually, QLogic has come out with the first single chip BMC, the baseboard management controller. And it's basically kind of everything on a single chip, and you just go. The BMC exports a couple of interesting logical components to you, the end user, to muck around with. Okay, it gives you a chassis subsystem, which basically allows you to do things with the case and the chassis. Okay, it gives you a system event log, which is basically responsible for doing kind of syslog type stuff, but in firmware, and we'll touch on that in a bit. A field replaceable unit repository, and for anyone who's used other enterprise management tools, you'll be familiar with the FRU, and we'll go through that as well. Sensor data repository. And two different types of buses. And we're going to go into these briefly. The chassis system allows you to do things like turn the machine off, turn the machine on remotely, affect a power cycle or assert reset. So if the machine is locked up or hung or whatever, remotely you can still get to it and have this little BMC, wake up the system or hit it somehow. You can also figure out, how, on a kind of a general level, how am I doing? Is my power okay? It just kind of tells you yes or no. you know, has anyone opened the top of the case, which is where there's an intrusion sensor. So is the case open or is the case closed, you know, and how's the fan doing, right? And it's kind of not a lot of granularity at this particular level, but it just gives you a nice little feel in terms of, you know, should I look at this more closely or should I just skip over and go to the next one? The system event log is contained in NVRAM or flash. It doesn't really matter on the machine. Basically, it logs a bunch of interesting hardware-level failures or warnings, things like single-bit ECC errors, faults in your power supply, any sensor that has a violation on its thresholds. You know, like somebody drops their keys in the thing and, you know, the 12-volt rail shorts against ground, it'll find that. And what's really interesting here is, we'll just pause for a minute in to say that, to show you how out of band this whole thing is, you can have no processors in a system, and you can have no RAM in the system, and you'll get an entry in the system event log saying, you know, you idiot, there's no RAM and there's no processors, right? So at which point you go and you buy some RAM and processors. The FRU is a great tool for people who are managing inventories. You've got a large install base of systems, you know, and they may be different flavors of systems. They might be used for different things. They might be in different departments, different customers, yada, yada, yada. The field replaceable unit repository has information on it relating to the motherboard and the product as a whole, whatever it is. So, for example, you know, the motherboard part number and serial number, the manufacturer, even a website that you can reorder from, you know. Maybe your own purchase order that was originally specified for it can be in there. As well, you've got an asset tag, which is programmable, that you can set remotely. So, you know, if you've ever worked in enterprise, you probably see guys running around with stickers that they stick on stuff, you know, that say, you know, property of yada, 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 you know, and some big long number. Well, at this point, you know, with this stuff, they can just program it into the flash, and it's in there. And that's kind of interesting because if you don't want to use the inventory control or the asset tag for that kind of stuff, there's some other really cool and funky evil things we can do. And we'll get on that a little bit later. Normally in a BMC system or an IPMI-enabled system, you have a whole bunch of sensors. These are not the same sensors as the LM sensors that are hooked up to your SM bus. These sensors sit on what's called the IPMB, which is a private I2C bus that runs around your motherboard that's also powered by 5-volt standby, and all the sensors are on there, and they talk directly to the BMC. There are a couple of ways of finding out what getting access to those things from Linux, and we'll touch on that briefly later, but it's just important to know that this isn't the same stuff as LM sensors, because LM sensor just normally tells you a couple of interesting things, whereas with these IPMI sensors, we get a whole kind of plethora of sensors that we can go with. Any kind of discrete digital or analog sensor can be used. They're all supported. You've got programmable events and thresholds that this microcontroller will monitor for you, all completely out of band. And normally on IPMI-enabled systems, you get a whole whack of temperature sensors, fan speed sensors, and a whole bunch of voltage sensors, so you can see how your rails are doing or whatnot, and that can be pretty useful because if the sensors are fast enough, you can actually see dips and things when you power the system on and whatnot. So if you plug one too many drives in, and you can see the 12-volt rail going, you know, which is important. You keep your system from blowing up. Pardon me?
I think it's from a McDonald's commercial.
You remember the McDLT? You don't remember keeps the hot side hot and the cold side cold? Right? It was like 3 a.m. I'm sorry? No, well, IPMI is an open spec. Anyone can go to, you know, the Intel websites, who kind of put everything together, and get the IPMI spec. 1.5, which is coming out next year, is going to be a really, really like completely open spec. Whereas to get IPMI 1.0, that spec, you just kind of have to sign, give them your email address online, and they just send it to you. There aren't any, as far as the BMC itself, I don't know of any patent issues. Essentially, it's just a piece of firmware running in a micro. So I don't, there probably aren't any issues with that. And there's actually, there is a BMC integrators, implementers guide, which tells you, you know, if you're planning on making one of these things, here's all the things you have to do, you know, and watch out for. Because some of it can be non-trivial. So that's great. That's one node. Okay, that's one machine. But what if I have a whole bunch of machines? Well, where we're moving towards is using these things called ICMB bridges. And what that allows you to do is it allows you to actually link machines together over this external bus, which is just, you know, a serial multi-drop type thing. And you can route messages back and forth between the two. So, you know, one BMC can talk to another BMC, and then they can talk and exchange data and whatnot. And one machine can be a master if you wanted to, although the lower level protocol is actually multi-master, so it's no big deal. And you get up to 255 bridges per network, management network, and you get 255 devices on each bus. So there's quite a lot of room to work around with for now. Yeah. Which, do you know what does it look like? Is it?
It's a 4-pin, fairly square connector.
Yeah. That's an ICMB connector, okay. For doing that kind of stuff. Yeah.
They call it something else.
Yeah, they probably, yeah, they would. But everyone calls it something different. And I2C is the low level bus that's used to run around. So to talk to the BMC, there's four basic methods, three available to us right now. One is this port called the emergency management port. The emergency management port is like a serial port. Okay. The keyboard controller style interface is basically an ISA thing. It sits in ISA space, and you can access it locally. The block transfer interface is similar, except it only allows, it's interrupt driven, and it allows you to do kind of bursty traffic stuff, whereas KCS is character-based. And DPC over LAN is out-of-band access over LAN, and we'll touch on that as well.
So the
DPC over LAN is currently not available. It has been spec'd out as part of IPMI 1.5, and while we do have some beta code, you know, that we're going to be playing with, it's not expected to be available until it's been, you know, probably, I would say, another 8 months. But this is one of the rare times where they're actually kind of on their target, so I'm pretty, yeah, I expect it to be available in 8 months. So the emergency management port is this great little out-of-band port. On Intel systems, it shares COM2, so in the BIOS, you can enable it or disable it. There's nothing that says that it can't be its own port, and that's fine. And basically, it just burps data out at 19.2 every now and then, and you can send it commands to talk to the BMC. And then basically, it provides all the... It's a subset of IPMI 0.9. So you can't do all the cool, funky stuff that you can normally do with IPMI in the spec, but you can do the bare necessities. You know, I can turn the machine off, reset it, yada, yada, yada. It also provides console or BIOS level console redirection, which is really neat because this is one of the first times I've seen this available on just kind of a vanilla motherboard without having to put some kind of special card in. Just like the SUNS, basically, all messages to the that are routed through the BIOS get thrown out to the serial port, which means you can remotely hit F2 and go into your BIOS and reconfigure your BIOS. The subset was originally put on because IPMI at that time did not specify physical interfaces, and it didn't specify this logical BMC thing. But how you talk to it was totally up to you, and essentially it kind of left people to do whatever they want. So they've now fixed that and specified interfaces for IPMI 1.5, and basically. I think it was a combination of that, and they just ran out of room in the ROM. The keyboard controller style is just basically an ISA driver. It's a, you know, there's a driver actually that ships with Vacuum that we'll touch on briefly in a minute, which talks about typos, whatever, which is an IPMI driver which lets you see all sorts of cool stuff in PROC. And its disadvantage is that it's single I/O based. It looks like a keyboard controller. You send it a byte, it responds with an ACK, and it's a pain in the butt. Block transfer is the same thing, except it's interrupt-driven, and it supports DMA. So it's a lot more efficient. It's better. It's a lot better for that. DPC under LAN is still under construction. It's basically a system where the soldered on onboard NIC can route messages that are tagged in a certain fashion. Instead of generating a processor interrupt, it'll generate this other interrupt going to the BMC, and the BMC will DMA it off the chip. So then the BMC has this little kind of thin network stack, and it goes and it does the right thing. What we know about this so far is that it's session-based, and so that you have to authenticate to it somehow, and all the traffic is going to be encrypted. But we still don't have an integration guide yet, so we don't know.
Yep.
Yes, it does. It does. From what we understand, what you do is you fiddle something in the IP header, and the BMC basically, instead of sending it to the CPU, sends it to the BMC, and the local OS is never aware that anything was received, unless the reporting is set up properly. Pardon me? The CPU wouldn't get an interrupt if it was a management packet, because you can do this when the machine is off. So you can still communicate with the machine even when it's off. Okay. So that's kind of a brief on IPMI itself. You can do, you know, there's a lot of features that are related to sensors and whatnot that we haven't touched on before, but we'll get to it now as we kind of show the connection with Vacuum. So Vacuum was originally just an EMP, the Emergency Management Port Library. Its first real kind of, you know, debut as a product was in what we originally called the VA Reliance Desktop, which was marketing guys have renamed Vacuum 1.0. At that point, we got involved in the IPMI development track at Intel and have been contributing to that quite a lot. And there was a hell of a lot of wrangling we had to do at Intel to get them to open up a lot of the specs. So that's the blood of the unbelievers. And many an Intel person has died. Vacuum consists of three main sections or components. There's the Nexus, which is kind of the brain. It's where everything comes together. Everything talks through Nexus. There are clients, clients can be anything from a graphical user interface to web CGI scripts to a command line. They can be anything, an automated script, whatever. Then there are modules, and modules are on the back end and actually do the work. So Nexus's job is probably first and foremost to say Nexus has to run on a machine that you call your node controller. So this machine is kind of, you know, a central point for collating all the data you want to manage and for sending, getting the management stuff out. Machine at this point doesn't have to be very high power, very powerful. Depending on what your topology is for your network, you may want to use, you know, some machines versus other. But for the most part, it's just strictly kind of a hardware issue, how you want to connect to things. It's also it's responsible for accepting client connections and from a client, a script, graphic user interface, whatever, and punting requests off to the proper module. Clients are based on our Vacuum client library, which is kind of our abstracted API for doing clients, which allow us to change a lot of things under the background without pissing off developers. Sorry, Raster. And right now, we've got three clients in the works. One's called Hoover. It's being done by Dean Johnson over at SGI. It's designed to be for larger scale, type things. One's called FLIM by Raster here, it's designed for small to medium type installations. And there's a command line utility called VASH, which is really powerful, which Zach has done. And Zach's also done the vacuum client Perl extensions, which allow that kind of stuff. Did you want to talk about that at all? Or?
Yeah, I'll just sort of touch on that briefly, I guess. One of the cool things that we're trying to do is provide the API to people to program in various different languages. So I've written a Perl XS binding, so you can link with the standard libraries and do stuff from Perl. There's also a Java class in the works that's going to allow people to do stuff from Java as well. We really want to sort of liberate people to use whatever language they feel like to write clients and hopefully modules in the future as well. So that's a big point is, you know, we want to make sure that people understand that they're free to use whatever tools they need to write clients.
Modules. So we've got a client API library. We've got this module API library. And basically all of our modules are based off of this API. And once again, there's also Perl bindings for that as well. If you want to do modules in Perl, you can do them in Perl. I think Sean Perry's doing a Python binding for both sides as well from the Debian group. So if you're a Python guy, are there any Python guys? Wow. Okay. Cool. Then you'll be able to do that as well. And that's on both sides, front end and the back end. So the first module is the EMP module, which is basically right back to the beginning in terms of IPMI. The full remote chassis control, power on, off, yada, yada, yada. Inventory control remotely, you know, what's the model number, part number, serial number, asset tag info for this machine. You can remotely program in the asset tag. And I'll pause a bit for that kind of neat thing you can do with the asset tag, because this is a neat little area where you could actually program. We've got people who program in things like IP address information and boot instructions into this thing and pull it out on the other side on boot up to do stuff. Because it's stored in the NVRAM. So for diskless clients and stuff, it's really, really cool for clustering people. We're doing some hacks to the LILO loader to allow the LILO to pull that string out of the NVRAM and use that as an append to the kernel. So if you've got all these machines out there and you want to change, you don't want to log into them all or change something, you just say, you know, set the asset tag to this. And the next time you reboot, LILO will pull this thing out and go, okay, let's go. Done. You know, so if you want to boot your machines from over the network to do some kind of upgrade or whatever, you can do that. There's a system event log management stuff, you know, for pulling out failure stuff. And up to the minute news and weather. Real-time sensor data retrieval. So all of these great sensors, and normally there's anywhere between 16 and like 30 of them, various temperature sensors and fan speed temperatures and whatnot, you can get at them all. So if you want to, you know, generate histograms based on other what's going on and temperatures and whatnot, you can do all of that. And the module is almost 100% non-intrusive and out of band, which means you don't run anything on the remote system. The exception is if you want to do real-time sensor stuff, because sensors are not reading a sensor, which is kind of strange. You can remotely through the EMP get a list of sensors, get the threshold values for the sensors, but you can't actually read the sensor. So there's a driver we've built that you can install with a utility program called EMP Extent-D. It's a daemon that will allow Vacuum to pull out sensor data. It also enables the hardware watchdog on the BMC, which is part of the IPMI spec. So if you've got an IPMI-enabled motherboard, you no longer need a third-party hardware watchdog card. It's just got it. It's in there. It's in all of them. It's mandatory, and it's free. So it's great. And the module supports multi-port serial cards or terminal servers to connect. Because you're going to need and this is where your kind of individual topology comes in. You're going to need to figure out your topology, because you have to have a connection between the node controller and each of these little serial ports. So you can either do that if you have an install from, you know, 1 to 50 machines or 80 machines or a rack. You could do that with a conventional terminal serial port concentrator, or rather like a multi-port card, like a rocket port or a Cyclades or whatever. Although we haven't had very much luck with the Cyclades cards. Or you can go with a more, if you have a larger install base, you can go with a more dense solution, like using, you know, Cisco 3640s with the 16-port or 32-port async cards, and you can go to, it kind of depends on how much you want to spend, really. And you know, I mean, there's always something out there for you, depending on what you want to do. When DPC, and it's important to note that when DPC over LAN becomes more available on hardware, which, although the spec's coming out in February or March, we probably won't see, and we may see firmware on limited hardware in 8 months, you probably won't see it on normal hardware until the latter half of 2001. You know, the EMP port itself, while still there, probably will not be used for very much, because now you can do it over LAN. And it's probably, you know, use your existing infrastructure to do that, rather than having to run serial cables all over the place. The RSH module basically is just simply that. It allows you to do a couple of things with RSH remotely and go with that. That was for you. query syslog and whatnot. It's in a state of transition right now. We're kind of figuring out what to do with it. And, you know, we're moving ahead. Because one of the things that has been very important from the beginning of what we've been doing is the security implications of doing all of this. The security implications of having a central machine somewhere that can turn all your other machines off. Or, you know, execute some commands or whatnot, or, you know, do things, right? So, and I'll touch briefly on it now. Is there a slide on that? Do we put that on the security considerations?
No, just go ahead.
You didn't do that? Okay. So when a client connects to Nexus, to a node controller, and a client can run anywhere, it can run on the local machine, it can run somewhere else. You know, as long as it's linked with the client library, it can connect to Nexus and it's happy. You have to authenticate to Nexus, and you authenticate, you know, you have to have a Nexus account. And a Nexus account has address connection control lists, very much like TCP wrappers, and it's got command control lists. So you can say user Bob is allowed to connect from his workstation only, but he can only, from there, he can only do this, you know, and that kind of stuff. So those things are better taken care of. As well, if you have OpenSSL on your system, all traffic is encrypted with OpenSSL, from the client all the way but to the back end. And we're trying to avoid modules that allow you to execute arbitrary commands. I don't think at this point there's any way of just executing an arbitrary command. Now, as far as the back-end stuff, like the EMP module, the EMP module has its own password. Because hardware, you can set it up so that nodes have specific passwords for connecting to them. So, you know, right all the way through, we're trying to keep this nice and lean, yet, you know, provide some peace of mind and go to that and look at that. And if there's anyone that's, you know, and if at any point anyone here thinks, you know, that's kind of cool, I think I can do this better, though, or I think I'd like to get involved, you know, we're looking for a lot of help, because as you'll see, our plans for the next couple of months are pretty aggressive, because we've got some neat plans.
That being said, of course, there are places where having an RSH module is actually quite useful. For instance, scientific clustering, anywhere where you're not really exposed to a public network, it's still very useful at this point in time, because you can do basic things like, you know, check the logs that are located on the system, shut down the machine at the operating system level, which is obviously nice. If you think about what the EMP module does, is it basically power cycles the machine. So you could spend a lot of time doing FSCKs and possibly losing a little bit of data here and there if you have to do that too often. So it's definitely something that's needed. And obviously, we're looking at ways of trying to do things with OpenSSH at some point in time, if we can, licensing permitting.
The SysStat module is basically kind of like the old StatD, only encrypted and secure and authenticating and whatnot. So it gives you all sorts of statistics and whatnot, information on the current machine running. This module does require a daemon to be installed, just like StatD. Sircon is a serial console redirection module, and it's really kind of neat because it allows all of your serial consoles to be kind of concentrated at the node controller. So once again, you could be anywhere. You could be at home, okay? And you could run your client, and you could tell Nexus, either using the Vash command line tool or using a graphic user interface, after you've authenticated to Nexus, you could tell Nexus, you know, I want a serial console in read-write mode on web server 1. And what it'll do is it'll come back and it'll tell you, okay, telnet to this address, which is the node controller, on this port, which is a port that the module has allocated, and here's your one-time password. So then you go, okay, great, so you telnet to it. And basically, once you put in your one-time password, you're connected at the mode that you requested through the module directly to where you want to go. There's support for multiple readers, one writer. So very much, so you can, if you're, and you can steal the write lock if the writer has been idle for like 5 minutes. So if you want to show someone how to do something or you're training somebody or whatnot, you know, you can have the write mode, they've got the read mode, and you can show them what to do or whatnot. And if you go home and leave the write mode enabled, you can steal the write mode to another connection if you need it. The other thing that that this module supports is kind of passive monitoring of all the streams. We've all kind of probably been in a situation where we were running kind of an experimental kernel, and you know, overnight the thing kept locking up and crashing. And maybe you have a hardware watchdog that reboots your machine every time this happens. Well, that's great, but you know, those messages maybe, those oops messages are probably gone, right? So what you can do is with Sircon, you can set alerts. So you can say, okay, I want to set an alert on panic and oops, and I want you to grab the next 10 lines of whatever follows that. And basically it'll sit there and monitor 1,000 machines and watch the serial data coming over the console port. And if it sees this, it'll capture it and stick it into a trap log that you can pull out later to see what happened, and then go from there.
I might want to touch on the SSL being added to the format.
Yeah. The other thing is that we're working on is looking at adding SSL support, so that if you had a system where you had all your serial consoles for a machine going into some kind of like a Cisco-equipped, like an iOS terminal concentrator, and you had the iOS patches to do SSL 1, then we would be able to connect to that and talk securely, so nothing's in the clear as well. Other modules, and this is really brief, BayTech module, those BayTech power strips that are serial port addressable for turning off peripherals and things. The MSC SVC module, which is for SGI-based. It's SGI's version of EMP, basically. That's a project that's kind of coming out of SGI. The user admin module, which allows you to administrate users. ICMP Echo is kind of just it was actually a test module that kind of got in there, and it's going to be going away in favor of an all-encompassing internet service module that basically allows you to do stuff like, you know, how are my services? And, oh, they're fine, you know, that kind of thing. So that's where we are today. Where we're going tomorrow, and 2.0 is our next release, and it's planned for August 14th at Linux World. What we're doing right now is we're furiously writing documentation, crazy docs, because this is, as you can imagine, this isn't a very easy thing, or it's not non-trivial to do, although we're trying to make it as non-trivial as possible. Because you have to do a lot of thinking ahead of time in terms of how you do this. It's the same thing when you install other enterprise management apps, except for when you install like Tivoli or OpenView, you pay through the nose to have them do the thinking for you. Unless you have a lot of time, in which case you can do the thinking yourself. 2.1 is a point release that we're looking at doing in September. Basically, it's got an RPM management module, allows you to do stuff like install this RPM on these 100 nodes. And it goes, okay. You know, upgrade this to this and, you know, remove this and do this over here. Or synchronize this machine to all these other machines, and it'll go and do it. The VA Lilo boot extension, which allows you to pull strings out of the asset tag and operate on them as if they were typed at the Lilo prompt, which is going to be useful, really useful for cluster people. Yeah?
When you say it's going to allow you to remotely install RPM modules, do you mean it's going to send the RPM manual through the serial port?
No, this will be over LAN. Right. No. The modules themselves can have their own ways of communicating with the node. The EMP module is actually the only module that actually communicates over serial, although it can...
Serial console obviously does that as well.
But. You know, but no, you can also connect to be able to do this over LAN. Does that answer your question?
I guess so. So you have two channels of communication.
Primarily, you would have two. Normally, you would have... I mean, if you're using EMP, you would have two. You'd have a serial port, okay, or the LAN. Or... if what you had done was used a network concentrator instead of a multi-port serial card on your machines, you would have them all coming in on the LAN. However, the EMP protocol, and this is said in the documentation as well, and it's very important, the EMP protocol is very, very strict about timing. So if you were to run your EMP traffic on a LAN, okay, like using some kind of serial concentrator to LAN thing, first of all, make sure it's a good one, you know, like a Cisco or the what was the other ones we? Portmaster is fine. Something that's like because latency is critical here. The second thing is don't run when you connect it to the LAN. Don't run it on the same wire as the rest of your LAN traffic. Run it separately, simply because. Any kind of spike in network traffic that causes, you know, the latency to kind of jump like that is going to cause difficulties. It's not going to be a fatal thing, but it's going to make things a little bit more confusing to try, you know, because the EMP module is very good now about figuring out protocol drops and stuff like that. Although, you know, there are certain retry timeouts that are just a pain in the butt to wait for. You know, so if you try sending something and it gets lost and you have to wait for a while and then try to resend. It's just a hassle and probably not even worth it. How's that? Next.
So the answer to your question is the serial port will simulate a character-based terminal initiating a session of installing an RPM from a known port.
This particular module has nothing to do
with the serial port.
The way it works is the module can really do whatever it wants. When you write a module from scratch, you can have it connect out over the network, you can have it open up a serial port, you can have it stream bytes from dev null if you want. It's really up to the module writer. So in this case, it would be a secure way of transferring an RPM over the network and having the local machine install that RPM.
Or if you were doing it to a multiple group, maybe multicasting them. So it only gets transferred once. That type of thing.
So you do support a GMP? Like, if I wanted to multicast something?
That's going to be something that's in the low-level portion of the actual module and work on that. We're still working on getting the 2.0 stuff done. So that's something, and if that's something that you're interested in, I mean, I would love to talk to you about it.
There is actually someone at VA who was already working on that, though. So, I mean, I do anticipate support at some time in the future.
Okay.
I guess I'm just not getting your typology. Just move on.
Okay.
I get your functionality. I just don't know how you're doing.
Okay. A module for doing UPS stuff with the APC stuff. This will basically give you PowerShoot type functionality. This does require a serial port. Because the APC UPSs have a serial port to connect to. And then there's the internet service module, which will allow you to, you know, see if my web server's up, and that's all done over the network. I'm kind of an X10 freak, so I see a lot of you guys are too. So I've got one of those CM11As, so we're doing a module for that just for fun. And then a web-based client. For doing, you know, CGI for doing kind of management from over the web.
For the APC module, are you proposing connecting the UPS to the machine it's powering, or concentrating the UPS into the Nexus machine?
It can either be either. You could connect the PowerShoot port, or that little port, to once again either directly to the node controller machine, right, or at which point you require a serial port. And
only if you're using the cheap ones.
Do they also support LAN?
Most of them do, yeah.
Oh, okay. Excellent. We are still waiting for our unit to come in.
Bigger APCs, you can get modules for them. The lower priced ones, the serial port, they measure the voltage on the actual serial port to see if that dips below a certain level rather than doing an RS-232 communication. Then there's a step up from that where you have software, a daemon that listens to the serial port by RS-232 and then emulates over the loopback interface, the network interface of a UPS.
Oh, excellent. This is, we're still waiting for our hardware from APC, so we'll know more about this later. But no, okay, well then either LAN or serial port based on what's going on. Excellent. 3.0 has a lot of, it's pretty aggressive. Basically what we're trying to do is vacuum so far has been pretty passive. You ask it to do something for you and it does it. You know, you request something and it tells you, and that's great, but you know, when you're in larger installs, you want it to be kind of more proactive. So what we're shooting for 3.0 is a module restructuring where everything is more active. So things are automatically looking for things that happen. You know, we're automatically looking for things. And all this stuff is sent to an event database in the back end, which you have access to. At the same time, we're looking at the NASA CLIPS-based expert system stuff, which is really, really excellent at a really excellent inference engine for doing things like, you know, looking at a whole bunch of events coming in, making a decision based on a set of rules and a set of rules that it also learns from them. So, I mean, it's really excellent at that.
Just to explain a little bit more about what that actually buys you, in the current implementation, the 2.0 stuff with vacuum, because it's so passive, it's difficult to set up a simple client that would do something like, in the event of a problem, send me an email. Because you'd be constantly polling every node out on your network and asking basically, you know, are you okay or do this for me? And so it would be a very complicated module to have it send email out to the system administrator or do some sort of advanced response. In the future, we're hoping to push forward and get it to a point where there can be many customized clients that will allow you to do things exactly tailored to your needs in any particular situation.
Obviously, we'll support the new DPC over LAN stuff and the SNMP client support for talking to remote modules. That's already in the works, actually. And some different access methods, which other people are actually spurring on right now. One of which is a fellow that's doing a POM7 wireless client, and another one is a kind of voice modem dial-in thing where you can dial in and punch in the name of the node and then punch in your administrator password and do and perform operations. A new module system, syslog receiver, basically it's just a collation point for your syslogs. Since we're pulling in all these other events, we might as well collate syslog as well and put it all in the database. So have it all come in and prioritized and then put in. Modules for talking to storage attack network device stuff, which would be compliant with SDMAPI, which is the new spec for doing that. And that's where we're heading. So in essence, what we're trying to do is we're trying to create an open source version of HP OpenView or Tivoli. Are there any questions or?
It's good.
Well, the OpenNMS is a great tool. I mean, it's a great visualization tool. They do everything over SNMP. But they're very Boolean right now. So it's either yes or no. It's one or zero. So you say, for example, you tell the Java agent, tell me when this thing dips below this. And then you can just say, you know, is it? And it says no. Is it? No. Is it? Yes. And then it stores all that. Whereas, you know, vacuum allows a lot more analog stuff. Now there is an area we're talking to OpenNMS to see where we can kind of integrate together to work together on this stuff. And we're also talking to the Mount Linux guys. They're the guys doing the local configuration stuff. And I mean, what we're at right now is we're looking at writing a kind of a vacuum SNMP agent, relay agent, where you could send SNMP commands or sets and gets to vacuum and then have it convert those into the proper IPC requests to do things. Although I think they've gone, I think that they're going to find that it may not function well that way. They have a great tool. As far as visualization, it's really, really cool. But I had found it to be a little bit limiting in terms of what we could, where we could go with it. Yes?
On your previous slide, you mentioned that you were using some kind of new technology. Can you expand on the implications of that?
Our humor, our sense of humor was obviously really bad last night at 3 o'clock in the morning. That was supposed to be a joke once again. I think we'll have to can those from our next presentation. It's in reference to, I guess, a sort of obscure Canadian infomercial about a vacuum cleaner that requires no bags because it has cyclone action.
You are joking, right? Okay. There was a question over here.
Yeah, there's also SGI, performance computing,
PCP.
Yeah.
I can talk about that.
Okay, go ahead.
Dean Johnson, who is working with us, he's from SGI, he's doing the Hoover client, has already talked about writing modules to interface with the PCP stuff. Our main goal is to interface with everything, to provide a single common user interface that'll allow you to talk to everything that's out there on your network. And that's where we hope to be in the future.
So the PCP guys actually are right kind of on board with us and are totally cool with working together and having a bridge interface between our two technologies. And Dean's working on that.
And the other kind of neat thing is a lot of the larger SGI clients are kind of excited about this chance to integrate everything together and have this one really cool, really advanced management interface. So I think there'll be a lot of support from the customer level in the future as well there through them.
You probably have a long list on your website. Can you give us a brief overview or rundown of what hardware actually supports this so far?
Okay. Well, the only hardware specific, there are only two. Well, then the BayTech module, I mean, there are only two hardware-specific modules that exist right now. I guess there's the EMP module, right, and then there's the MSC thing. MSC requires is for, Onyxes and Reality Engines and those crazy machines. The EMP right now, any Intel Nightshade, Nightlight, Lancewood, or Coa d'Aberville board supports EMP right across the board.
Which ones have now, is that the microcontroller?
That's their IPMI enabled motherboards. Yep. So they have the BMC, they got the EMP port, they've got all these sensors and stuff. They got the hardware watchdog. It's just all in there.
But it's mostly just Intel
board. Qlogic has come out with NEC has a board, I believe, that uses the Qlogic chip, which is a relatively new ASIC that does, it's basically a single chip BMC, and it's got a little bit of NVRAM on it, and it's got a little bit of this and that, and it's got a software UART on it. This is the point, is that this technology is just kind of going forward, and the fact that IPMI 1.0, was just kind of restricted to Intel in terms of implementation, and now there's a chip manufacturer that's making a commercial off-the-shelf chip that you can just pop down onto a board and go, is a really good thing. So there's NEC, and then there are a couple of other vendors that are looking at it as well, but whether they actually go with it or not, I mean, it makes sense.
One of the things that we should probably point out is, if you go home today and try and look at this on the net, you want to look at the project page on SourceForge and the documentation that's actually available in CVS. Our project website is actually quite out of date at this point. And that's one of the things that once we get through this round of documentation and bug fixes, we're really going to have to push forward and get that to be much more up to date. It's kind of misleading at this point because it's referencing a whole lot of older problems and older features that we had.
Yeah, I'm web retarded, so I'm able to do that. Are there any other questions? Or hi.
I've noticed a fair amount of fragmentation in the last year or two within the clustering community with Piranha, LVS, Turbo Linux clustering. I was wondering how that impacts this particular project.
Well, we.
Well, it's kind of funny that you say that, because the fragmentation that you're talking about there, a lot of that is related to the tools that actually control it. LVS is really the core technology to most of that. Piranha is just basically a GUI to control the way that your LVS setup works. We're looking at modules to work with the LVS stuff.
One of the people working on that, Simon Horman. Is looking at writing a vacuum module as well. So he would be, he's the best guy to do it. He wants to do it. I would expect that to be done soon as well.
He's the guy who packaged the Ultra Monkey solution, which is basically the VA equivalent of those tools.
Yes, sir. Yes, there is. There are certifications you can get that you can do. Actually, there are emulators and software emulators you can get to do that.
So the next question is the any of the, I'm not familiar with all the code name or the names of the boards that you had mentioned there. Are any of the IACC board systems coming out of Intel going to be IPMI?
Yes, they will. IPMI is going to be the method that they use for management, for onboard management. Now, of course, that depends on the end vendor, right? I mean, one company could do, one motherboard vendor could decide to do one thing, one could do another. But it's probably a safe bet that a fair amount of them will be adopting the IPMI standard. Simply because... The KCS? No, no. The KCS can. I mean, there's no reason why the KCS can't live in PCI space as well. Although KCS, while currently is currently the thing that we use, we only use it because because the vendors until recently haven't routed the interrupt pin for the block transfer interface. Certainly, with IA64, that'll be connected. With the latest motherboards, it's now connected, so the block transfer interface is now available. So there'll be a driver forthcoming on that, and that just speeds things up a lot more. It's everything just makes it is just a lot more easier to interact with. But definitely, even if ISA goes away, there's
the KCS is still working with USB keyboard and stuff.
Well, it's a software emulated interface, right? It's a 2 byte it's a 2 byte window in memory space that looks like a keyboard controller. So it's got a bunch of status bits, and it's got a couple of flag bits, just like a keyboard controller does. And it's got one 8 bits of that is a data path, data channel. Which is why you probably don't want to use it for a lot of things, but which is why eventually the BT interface will be a lot more preferable. Any other questions? Comments? Anyone want to help? You had a comment or no? Anyone want to help? Anyone interested in contributing to this at all? Or no, you all just don't care.
I'd like to find out if Dell PowerEdge support. If the port that I'm seeing on the back, the larger Dell PowerEdge, is really that port that it's supported, and if so, I'd like to start running it on a couple of our bigs. We don't have a cluster configuration like you, but while I've been off in Canada,
right.
It would have been nice to be able to kind of remotely spank it.
Oh, yeah. Well, EMP is definitely the way to spank a box. there are a bunch of ways you can find out. I mean, you can look in your BIOS, see if it talks about EMP. You can install the KCS driver, and it'll tell you if it detects a BMC or not. And you'll just know. And then you're good to go. Okay, well, oh, yes?
Can you also tell us from
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, there is the NEC product, now that there are boards available, or the chips are available, I would expect that would be soon to become available on other flavors of motherboards. Plus, you could probably pick up a PCI add-on card that has a BMC on it with all the appropriate stuff as well.
Do those actually exist, or is that just something you're expecting to be very likely
in the near future? Well, the QLogic reference board is the first one I've seen, although, and it seems to, it's IPMI compliant, and it's got the chip on it. I don't know how much that costs, though. There's the only thing that would prevent someone from plugging it into a PCI 32 slot is the absence of standby power there. So you have to run a little, but then there's the whole thing about sensors, right? Because then, you can tell what the ambient temperature is inside the box and maybe measure your voltages, but you don't get a bunch of other stuff.
Well, quite honestly, for me, I'm less concerned with getting in and being able to tell the sensors and things like that.
Than just being able to kick the thing? Right.
That's about it. Be able to go in and remotely. I mean, it won't help. I've got an open spark right now with a sick file system.
Right.
I'm just not willing to shut it down and try to restart it while I'm in another country.
Right.
Because I'd have trouble getting back in.
Understood. Understood. No, it doesn't. The only thing that needs the BMC is the EMP module, the emergency management port module. If you don't have an emergency management port on your system, then that doesn't mean you can't use vacuum. It just means you can't use the EMP module. So you use all the other modules to do all the other stuff, and it's just fine. I mean, there's probably never going to be a case where you will use every single module. You know, in a lot of cases, they're just not going to apply. So you're going to not install them or just not configure them. And they'll just sit and they just won't do anything. So it's kind of all. That's why I'm saying it's kind of up to your topology how that's all set up. Hi, yeah.
Another question is, you have a bunch of modules that are used for like a RSH module, like RPS or LAN RPS module, which implies that you have a communication channel with the between the Nexus server or something like that.
Yes.
That's
right.
Do you spec out a protocol to provide for the module writer standard communication channel?
At this point, the module writer has to write their own daemon that runs on the remote node. Something we've been possibly tossing around for the future is maybe a common interface that they could all talk to.
Yeah, because many modules are that you add all the
Yeah.
I kind of agree with that. The one problem that you get into then, though, is you have so many people adding code to do individual things. It might be necessary for a module writer to do something that's not quite covered in the original design of that, so they want to patch it, and you get into sort of a nightmare that way. So at this point, it seems to make a little bit of sense to use individual modules until we can find a way to properly spec out the way to do it in the future.
Anything else? Or are we all hungry? Yeah, I'm hungry too. All right, thanks a lot, guys.